Talkback with Gary Null, Sundays at 8 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. Today, no guest, no original in-depth commentaries or investigative reporting. Instead, the entire hour is open for your input, calls, questions, thoughts, suggestions. What are the issues that you find important? Give me a call at 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. Now, normally, every day, we have an issue, and those issues are selected to provoke thought. They're always on something of relevance to all of us, but rarely discussed in the mainstream or even the alternative media. This program, however, is devoted to what's important to you, so let's hear from you now. Until you start calling in and we get your calls up, then I'm going to be giving you some of the latest in health and healing information. For example, from Social, Psychological, and Personality Science, the peer-reviewed journal, research done at Northwestern University, they're saying a lack of relationships and education are the top list of common American regrets. Let me quote this. Regrets, we've all had a few, although too many regrets can interfere with life and mental health. A healthy amount of regret can motivate us to improve our lives. The researchers did a sample of 400 Americans to ask them what they regret. The most frequent regrets of Americans are about love, education, and work. Romantic regrets, America's most common. Focus on lost chances of potential romances and relationships did not give up to their potential. The other common regrets for Americans involve family, education, career, finances, and parenting. Women were more likely to have regrets about relationships. Men were more likely to have regrets about work, careers, and education. It was the lack of romantic relationships and the lack of higher education that were regretted most. What are your regrets? What have you learned from those regrets? And what are you doing to change them? That would be something I'd like to hear from. 888-874-4888. All of us have regrets. I'll share some of mine, but later after I hear from you. One of the things I do today and have for a long time is encourage people to find something that excites them outside of what they can master. Force yourself to grow. But life should be a series of learning curves that once you've mastered what you've done, can do, then stop it. Let it go. And start all over again with a new learning curve. That means new skills, new tools, new trial and error, and then learn and grow and be excited by that. And I found when people do that, they are much healthier, much happier, much more interesting. They're much freer in their attitudes. If not, then all you do is lock in this little piece of life that you've mastered, and that's all you talk about, that's all you focus on. And then you feel uncomfortable being around people who are going to expect you to be anything other than that little thing that you mastered. This is as true for powerful people and wealthy people. And I've had an opportunity in my life. I've been gifted and blessed in two senses. I've been gifted by being given the opportunity at a very young age to have reached a level of success that others in our society were willing to open their lives to me. I never betray confidences, but some of the world's greatest artists, late in their life, needed help with their health, and I was asked by family members to come in and help them. So here I am, this very young individual. Here they're this very old person, and I had that rare opportunity to be there at that point of exchange where rarely the younger people have a chance to interrelate with older people, especially people who've mastered something in their lives at a significant level, and be able to sometimes befriend the people, always with respect to listen to their stories and learn something. And I've had a chance to meet thousands and thousands like that. In another respect, given the opportunity to see what motivates people to change, and more often than not, when people come to me who have diseases, something's wrong, I never start by having them talk about their swollen ankles or their blocked colon, whatever it may be. I ask some questions that sometimes they find off point. What are they happy with? What have they not done in life that they regret that they wish they could have? What are they willing to do to learn new and start over? Are they? Are they willing to start over? Are they willing to wipe the mind clean? And more often than not, the people say no. And when I suggest to them that part of their healing process is to start new, so they have a new attitude, a new discipline, a new integrative mindset, a new awareness of what not to bring into their body that causes the problem they're sitting in my office for. You didn't get your arthritis or high blood pressure or obesity because you were doing the right things, nor because you were doing anything you were not aware of. You were fully aware the choices you were making were wrong choices. You just didn't figure that today would be the day that the bullet would be in the chamber and you're Christopher Walken and the deer hunter in the scene where he's doped out, depressed out, waiting to see if his brain's end up on the wall when he pulls the trigger. Most people live with the idea that it won't be today they had their heart attack, their stroke, their partner walks out of them, they file for bankruptcy, or the marshal comes and puts them out of their house. It's never today until it is. It's never the Fukushima reactor melting down until it does. It's never the Titanic sinking because it was racing to set a record across North Atlantic when all the other ships had stopped for the night and waited till daybreak so they could see the icebergs. And the captain chose to go through the night at full steam because they felt invincible to the consequences of cause and effect. Like the coke addicts, that it's not going to cause a cerebral hemorrhage, not this time. Or the meth addict, it's not going to cause their heart to explode this time. Or the pothead, it's not going to cause delusional psychosis and paranoia this time. Or the diabetic, it's not going to cause a seizure this time. Until it does. Until the earthquake in Haiti. Until the tornadoes in Joplin, Missouri, or Tuscaloosa, Alabama. Until the flooding. But we've been on this river for 6 generations. Yeah. And you're on the river, and rivers flood. Do you assume it will never happen? But it hasn't, until it did. But it couldn't possibly happen here, until it does. So when I look at life, and I look at people, and I look at the issues they're faced with, I ask them a basic question: are you willing to change? And if the answer is no, then I try to give them someone who can help them adjust and adapt to their problem with some form of superficial help because I know they're not going to make it. That doesn't mean that everyone who says otherwise will make it, but it means that you've got to change their regrets. And most people are not honest, especially men are very reluctant to talk about what they regret because part of being a man is you're supposed to grin and bear it. You're supposed to not focus on it. Young men, it's different. Today, young men will regret a lot of things. My generation generally don't. But getting someone to talk about their regrets and then saying, okay, what if you were able to change your regrets and do it over? And they say, but hold on, now you're putting an obstacle in your way. Because you're a certain age, you can't start over. Because you've mastered one thing and nothing else, you can't master anything else. So that particular statement of that university about what people regret and why regretting in and of itself isn't the issue. Changing that regret into a positive action, allowing yourself to grow because of a regret. And think of all the people who have regrets about romances. How many times when you were with someone did you stop and think, my goodness, how blessed am I to have this person in my life? What is necessary to keep them in my life and continue sharing things that are positive? How about not being a bitch for a second? How about not unloading on someone with your emotional crap? How about not assuming because someone's your life you have a right to transgress the boundaries and sanctity of their being by humiliation, degradation, by fear, guilt, or shame? How about by stopping for a moment and say, you know, the fact that my father or mother or someone in my life abused me doesn't give me the right to abuse you. And how about having the courage to say to someone, this will catch you, listen carefully, everyone. How about having the courage to say, I'm a blessed and special soul. I'm going to allow you a chance to share all that I am. I will not allow you a chance to abuse it. If you abuse me once, it's too many times, and there won't be a second chance. What do you mean? Well, simple. Think before you say something. Think before you do something. Up to this point, if you've gotten away with abusing people, and they were because of their own guilt or conditioning or religious beliefs, they had to tolerate you, and did, you've assumed then that there's no length to which someone can be abused because as long as you say, well, I'm sorry, that suddenly everything's wiped clean. It isn't. If you've done something toxic to someone, you've done it with intent. You've done it with malice aforethought. You have done it with the sole purpose of trying to affect greater control within that person's life and the nature of what you're sharing. Now, how exactly does love have anything to do with that? It doesn't. So the moment anyone does something that's not loving to you, then don't allow them to ever again use love as what they're sharing with you. They're not. You're not that stupid. Oh, unless you are. If you allow someone to tell you that what they're doing is based upon love, and yet what they're doing is not, there's emotional violence, there's a degradation, there's a depreciation of who you are, then they're saying that you're no longer sacred. And therefore, because they've gotten close enough to you, they have the right to abuse you. Then one day, when you say goodbye, this energy is disconnected. Now they cry, but their tears are not for understanding the damage they've done. The tears are of self-pity for what they've lost, opportunity. What if you simply let people know, the magic number for me is one. You do it once, there won't be a second opportunity. Well, gee whiz. No gee whiz. Unless you're a complete blithering idiot, which you may be, then you're smart enough to know, don't abuse me and think I will tolerate it. I have a better understanding of the people who abuse people than the people who are abused, but you have to appreciate the people who accept abuse as if somehow on a religious level or social condition level that they are a better person because they're suffering are just really, really stuck. And there's no real joy or happiness in that person's life. All this brings us back to the central point. Where do we begin our journey of change? Are we going to change? Or are we simply try modifying something and adapting to it so that we don't really have to go through any discomfort and upset our lives? And then you'll see why people are watching these idiot television programs, not paying attention to what's important in political debate, selfishly pursuing their own life without any respect that the resources they're using, what they're doing, is impacting upon other people. They could care less. Is that the kind of person you want in your life? And if so, why? I'm Gary Knoll. That's our opening. Time for you. That gives you a plenty to work with. And also anything else you would like to share with us, The forum is yours. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Gary Noll, your turn. Let's say hello to Al from Long Island. Hi, Al. You're on the air.
Good evening, Gary. My question is, would it be accurate to describe our presidents as psychopaths and or sociopaths in light of the fact that they've been responsible for the killing of millions of men, including elderly men, women, including elderly women, pregnant women, and children, including infants? Some examples are FDR and the firebombing of German cities, Truman and the firebombing of Japanese cities, plus Hiroshima and Nagasaki, plus the start of the atmospheric testing program, which continued until the Test Ban Treaty in 1963, Eisenhower and the funding of genocidal war against the Maya of Guatemala, nuclear reactor construction, which continued until 1978, Kennedy, Johnson, Nixon, approval of defoliants containing dioxin in Vietnam, the bombing of civilian targets, including villages, churches, cities, hospitals, pagodas, etc., Reagan's funding of the death squads and military that murdered hundreds of thousands of men, women, and children in Guatemala, El Salvador, and Nicaragua, and finally, the two Bushes, Clinton, and Obama's approval of the use of depleted uranium munitions in Iraq and in the Gulf War.
Al, interesting overview how you connected that together. I would suggest that Barack Obama is not a sociopath, but rather is a psychopath. Psychopaths leave no remorse on the table of thought. They do what they do with the idea that it's not impacting them. Whereas a person of conscience would think about an action prior to taking it and assume that they are going to be in the footstep of the person that is about to receive what they're about to share and think, oh my goodness, how could I possibly do that? And then modify their thoughts to come up with something that is more humane or more pragmatic. The psychopath doesn't care about anyone except themselves. And then they join with others. Now, all this asks a larger question, Al, and that is, what are our myths? And what is your relationship to the myths in your life? And then you'll find that people align themselves by the myths. The conservatives, the liberals, the constitutionals, the greens, they will suddenly align all of the things that are important to them around the myth that that this person or persons in this party or this economic system has the answers and everything else is wrong. That means they need to rewrite their story. That means they have to begin the process of a turning. Now, throughout life, we come to points in life where we're excited about rebuilding for tomorrow. These are the good times. And then there's the awakening of our consciousness. Generally after college, when we're in the real world, and we see how the real world then does not align itself with the textbook version of business or school, church, government, or anything else. And that's when we have the chance for rapid social and personal changes. That's when we're most active intellectually. That's when we're most moral. That's when we suddenly develop a certain moral imperative where we're no longer willing to tolerate things we would have before because we didn't know. Now we know we can't do it. That's also when we're most likely to engage in creative achievements. Then the next turning is when we begin to break down. We have not lived with balance in our lives. We've lived with these myths and the myths have created illusions and everything has been to feed the illusion. And then one day it breaks down. It simply collapses. And then we see a crisis everywhere. But it is only in our society through breakdown that the truth is revealed. the truth of everything, everyone is then seen with a different insight. And then we go through a surrender to this, and either we become depressed and apathetic, or we become enraged, no longer willing to accept denial or avoidance, and we make change. Now, we can do this as individuals and collectively as a society. But remember what I said, the truth is only revealed when everything is seen differently, and that's because of a crisis brings us to this. And then finally, through this change, this rejuvenation, this transformation, then we want a new beginning. And the new beginning forces us to no longer adapt, but rather to transform. And hence we begin our life over, a new beginning, new tools, new resources, new learning, new consciousness, new excitements, new energy, new vitality. If you're the average person, however, you don't live by that. You don't have turnings. You want to be excited, but in a passive way, where you can watch something that's exciting on television or in a movie theater, but your own life is boring. You don't want to awaken your consciousness because you don't want to challenge your beliefs. If you awaken a consciousness, you put a person in a predicament, because once the consciousness is understood, everything that is not conscious, everything that is wrong, is understood and is not apologized for. I don't believe in apologies. I believe that if you do something wrong, acknowledge the lesson and the message in what you do wrong and just don't do it anymore. Otherwise, all we have are people who are perpetually screwing up, perpetually apologizing for the same thing, which means they are not changing. Their consciousness is not a life consciousness. It is only an emotional consciousness. And boy, that's a bad place to be. So their life is just one step away from breaking down, but they never really allow it to fully break down. So it's like the person that's watching Katrina. They know that a problem's coming, and they want to be in front row seat. They want to have a pizza, a beer, a popcorn, a cell phone, and they want to watch it. And each day as it comes, there's a certain excitement that's building, a certain adrenaline. Hey, this is interesting. This is good. Thank goodness it went from a Category 1 to a 2. Now 3. It's a 5. Wow, there's no Category 6, is there? No. So we might be seeing something absolutely devastating. Yeah. And I got a front row seat. Yeah, you do. You're in the front row of the Category 5. No, I'm watching it. Get up, take what's important, and walk out of town. Within one day, you've walked far enough to be in safety. No, this is too exciting. I understand, but did you remember last summer the people were watching that race and they got so close in the desert that they got mowed down because there wasn't room for the cars to go that fast in the desert without hitting people? So was the car to blame, the driver to blame, or the people's need to be that close to danger? When we look at Lady Gaga, we're that close to danger, the danger of losing all respect for anything that's truly original and creative. Our distortion becomes all the more pathetic because we then take something that's just an exaggerated, hyper extension of insecurity and fear, and we then praise it and laud it as if that's the new reality. So we've just pulled our chair closer to the television, and the television is virtual, and the virtual is real. None of this is sustainable. All of this means that we're afraid of any painful change. We want pure pleasure. And it also shows us how superficiality is what we value. And hence, we're all confused by what's real. Lady Gaga's not real. Watching two people beat each other in a cage is not real. Electing psychopathic politicians, all of whom are psychopathic to different degrees, is not real. Allowing people who we know are pathologically disturbed to have power in our lives are not real. Keeping your money in a bank, knowing full well that that bank is going to repossess your house, and when the bank makes a mistake, it'll be bailed out, but you won't, and the bank will show no preference or humanistic values to you when you need help. That's what we're not being honest about. Having 120,000 school teachers rally, as rightly they should have in Wisconsin, for collective bargaining, which I support, but not once saying, let us now go protect a neighbor's home from being foreclosed on. Let us tear up our credit cards. Let us take our money out of these corporate banks. Let us tell our pension funds to stop investing in countries for metals that are precious and destroying cultures like the Congo and allowing 1,100 women a day to be raped and 4.5 million people to be killed. Let us, and someone will say, what the hell are you talking about? We're here for us. If this was any other cause, we wouldn't be here. Have you confused us, Keith Olbermann, Rachel Maddow? Are you that stupid? We're here because we are selfish. Now they're knocking on our door. We weren't caring when they knocked on your door. When they took the little Jew down the street, we didn't care. When they told the black to go to the back of the bus, we didn't care. When they told a Latino, you here to clean my laundry, we didn't care. When they told the migrant coming across the wall, do our work, we didn't care. But now that it's our job, our security, our collective bargaining, oh yeah, we care. And there's a lot of us. But what else do you care about? Is there anything real out there that you care about? We look to what our culture defines as real. And fear will always distort our perception of what is real. And today we value fear. We give up our constitutional rights. Shame on the liberals and the Democrats for allowing the conspiracies of Bilderberg, the Council on Foreign Relations, for allowing these things to occur and mockingly saying none of this is real. That 9/11 happened, get over it, accept the official conclusion that Martin Luther King, that RFK and JFK were assassinated by lone nuts, there was no conspiracy. Timothy McVeigh, a lone nut, no conspiracy. That there are no conspiracies. And if you side with an Alex Jones, then we will not give you any credibility. How much fear is blocking your perception of the real world? Almost always you'll find the people who are most pious never enter a stage of clarity, never see the big picture, never see the connecting of the dots, because they live their lives as fragments. And as a result, all they have are a mass of distorted memories to guide them. And the more successful you become, the more narrow your focus. As a result, they choose a reality they can control, and they want to be front row entertained. You're either front row entertained by being rich enough to get into a club that excluded you before, but suddenly now that you can afford the price of admission, you are valued. Not because of how you got your money, that is irrelevant. But the fact that you could get into our club is relevant. So we will forgive all the things that make you what you are, and will allow you to be sitting at our table, making decisions over the world, because you got to the table. We won't talk about all the people at these powerful places being motivated by fear. No, they're all limited, but we only look at the so-called reality of their yachts, their power, their private jets, their bonuses, the apartments they live in, where they shop, how much they spend on bar mitzvah. There is no inner peace. There is nothing consistent except single-mindedness. Everything else is just a bunch of convoluted conflicts. So you wake up one day, Al, and you ask yourself these questions. That means that you're not allowing the past to distort the present. You know that true love does not project illusions. It merely emphasizes the truth. And you know that you would otherwise be living through your ego, which blocks all love of all things. Which tells us a lot about the power and privilege of those who need to have first choice, first in line, Everyone else must be restrained. You're not on the red carpet, get on the other side. You're not in the skybox, look up with your binoculars to see us parting. You're not in our community? Good, you can't afford to be here. And as a result, we feel resentment, so the only way we can get even is we can watch all this as a spectacle from our television sets. Nothing else matters. Remember this, fear and love do not coexist. One excludes the other. So those people who are living their life through love will get out of the way. They already have gotten not only themselves, but everyone they know, and they will have gotten out of New Orleans. Fear, insecurity, then you're going to sit closer and closer till one day you're going to be on the roof hoping people see you, because now you're the casualty of everything that you participated in. Does that answer your question, Al?
Thank you very much.
Let's say hello to Paula from Florida. Hi, Paul. Paula, you're on the air. Good. Go ahead, please.
What percentage of our financial funds should be invested in gold and silver? And then next year, as we approach the time frame of the solar flares, when should we start to take our cash funds out of the banking system?
Okay, well, first you have to pull back and look at this as an arc, a curve. Let's say that you are the average person and you're at the low end of where the arc begins. Solar flares? What solar flares? I don't want to know about them because there's nothing I can do about them. Oh, solar flares? Well, surely the utility companies will put surges in place and therefore it'll all be grounded and there won't be any problem. Oh, yeah, solar flares. The government, I'm sure, is on top of this. FEMA, working with the states to make sure all those major transformers and the substations are all protected. The assumption being that it's not my problem, therefore a person stays at the bottom of a beginning curve. As you begin to become aware of a problem, you immediately then realize where on that curve you are at. That's like being on the bank of a river. Look how beautiful the view is. We're sitting out here on the back patio. The water's coming by us, and we're having our picnic out here and the barbecue in the side yard. What if there's flooding? But it hasn't. You're assuming it never will flood? You're right at flood level. It floods, your house is gone. Are you willing to take that risk? You're going to find when people are in denial of that, they're choosing not to do anything. Now, then as you become more aware, you're saying, okay, solar flares are coming. NASA has predicted it. Now, normally when about every 11 to 12 years, when that flare comes and that massive energy from the sun comes, it's dissipated by our own magnetic protective shield. A little bit may get through, causing some electrical disruption, but generally nothing too bad. But now they found a breach in the electric magnetic field that is 5 times wider than Earth. 5 separate satellites have flown through it. It's changed the whole game plan. Now we're being told that if that solar flare comes through there, it's going to be multitudes worse than Katrina, as if the whole world is New Orleans, the lower Ninth Ward. Now, you're saying, okay, what is the probability that the government will act? It depends upon what it's going to cost and whether or not those who have been in control of the dialogue. Global warming, it doesn't exist. Just ask the Koch brothers or ask the enterprises and foundations that control the talking heads on television. They're the ones who send the experts forward to say global warming is not man-made, there's no reason we should be concerned. Are these the same people who told us that we didn't need more protection for our nuclear facilities? Okay, if however, the global, not even global, here in the United States, the electrical surge happens and it knocks out transformers, what's the likelihood they're going to be able to fix these, since virtually all electricity will be off? and much of what you need to repair something is electricity, or parts that have not been burned out. It depends upon how much gasoline you have to get to and from where these problems are. It depends upon what kind of communication system you have, since all digital communication will be gone. Satellites gone, cell phones gone, television gone, elevators, water pumps, electric pumps, all gone. So you're only going to have the gases in your car to get you where you're going. So then we're not looking at a few days, we're looking at months for repair, depending upon how bad it is. And some will be repaired faster, others longer. But it also means the very first thing that you got to worry about is that nuclear power plants only got about a 24-hour backup system, and then it's gone. And then the coolant that keeps those spent fuel rods from exploding and creating major hydrogen explosions, all that's going to stop, and therefore you're going to have 104 nuclear explosions, or could, around the United States. How would anyone know? You wouldn't. You would just be hit with a lethal dose of radiation. So these are, the more you learn, the greater the concern becomes, and then you become more proactive. What if I've been living near a nuclear facility? Then check your breast cancer rate and leukemia rate. It's going to be higher than anywhere else. I see. So I shouldn't be living near here to begin with. That's correct. Why did I? Because you chose to believe authority, and authority is giving you the official story. So we only believe in one reality, the official truth. There's no other truth. If you have any other truth, then you have to exclude yourself from participating in the paradigm, religious, cultural, corporate, educational. You must move out of it, because too many questions asked that are not going to be honestly answered makes everyone feel uncomfortable. So now you're saying, okay, then what can I do, since it doesn't look like you're going to be selfless enough or honest enough to tell us what the problems are, so we can realistically and appropriately put in surge protectors, of which we'll need about 5,000 of them, and then encourage people to go solar, which we could, and give them subsidies to help, which we could, and wherever possible, wind. All of America could be energized by wind alone. But we won't do it, because every time someone wanted to put a windmill where it would do the greatest good, someone said, that's blocking my view, whether it was in the Rocky Mountains or Colorado or on the West Coast or East Coast. Once again, that whole selfish notion, I care about life, my own, but not yours. You're going to block my view, I'm not going to support you, even if my own life could be in the balance. This is what we look at. Food. Are they telling us that all Americans should, in a responsible way, get whole grains and legumes in bulk and keep them in dry, cool storage because they can last for years? No, we're not, because we don't want people to get the idea that we're vulnerable, because then we're going to ask the politicians, why are we vulnerable? And politicians don't like to have anyone ask them anything that makes them seem as if they're not concerned in a proper way about what's going on. So know that your politicians are psychopathic. Know that the media is complicit and stupid. Know that the average person is selfish and careless. Know that our institutions are always official, and the rope is around everyone's waist. So when one goes over the cliff, everyone follows, yelling and angry at the person who's pulling them in, but not willing to cut themselves free. So only when you become independent of your ideology can you then see where on this curve of enlightenment and truth are you. So then you get your grains and legumes. I suggest just on a normal basis to have 1,000 pounds. Then you get backup filtration systems. So whatever water you need, you'll have the ability to filter water. You have a backup solar system. These are not expensive and easy to have. That you have a backpack ready, no matter where you live, a backpack with silver, because silver, junk silver, not any of this foolishness of buying, this antique schmantique. Silver and gold and any precious metal will be based upon its gross weight, not based upon its unique antique quality. So you get junk silver, meaning dimes, quarters, half dollars, and dollars, 1963 pre, and you have several thousand dollars and currency, because you're not going to be able to do anything. Gold is merely, you're not going to be exchanging gold, because you can't buy anything with gold. It's merely there when everything else is not as a value, you'll have something of a overall gross value. In other words, kind of look at gold in the future as a house without a mortgage. So it's your insurance company. It's a standard, but it's not a tradable currency under normal conditions. When the crisis happens, gold is going to go through the roof, as will silver. I predict silver will be the more valuable as far as our day-to-day use, and it will probably go to, I believe silver will go before the next year to $60 an ounce. It'll vary. There'll be shorters in, manipulation of the market. It'll bounce back and forth, but that's where it's going. Gold will go to $1,600 easily by January, and then wait to see what happens with the European Union, which will affect it, and when enough countries that have enough dollars get rid of their dollars, then watch other currencies take the dollar place, and then the dollar value will drop by 30 to 50%. Then hyperinflation is to follow. So have a plan B. If you never have to use that plan B, good for you. I suggest people get a moped, electric, get a fold-up bike, get a backpack, and you just a radiation suit, put it in the closet and forget that it's there. But if that day ever does come because of social crisis, social anarchy, natural disaster, you'll be the person who's able at least to have a plan B. Everyone else will be asking, what just happened? And someone will answer, life just happened and you weren't ready for it. Does that answer your question, Paula?
I think so.
All right, and remember, don't try to convince other people of the rightness of your thoughts, because other people first have to filter what you're saying through their belief systems. And their belief systems must always deny that we are vulnerable. And everything in life, however, is a choice not to do its opposite. But remember, what a person denies, they cannot change. And people confuse what they do with who they are. And people confuse authority with trust that these people can prevent a problem or correct a problem if there is a problem, but don't want to see themselves being proactive. We're all so certain that someone can revive us if we have a heart attack, but we don't want to take the hamburger out of our mouth to prevent it. Hope that answers your question, Paula. Philip from Colorado, you're on the air.
Now, what you found in your research on the medical quality, medical marijuana quality of the organic and those that vaporize. I have one or two friends that use vaporizers and have pain issues and so on, and they use it for that, but they use the high quality medical quality. And I haven't found a lot of research yet on that, but I understand you have looked at that and in terms of the brain and lungs and so on.
Philip, I've done an enormous amount of research on medical marijuana and marijuana of all types, and I would ask you to examine if you have pain, and medical marijuana can alleviate the pain, which it can. What else could alleviate the pain as good or better that does not in any way adversely affect the brain, which even medical marijuana will affect the brain? Anything that can be vaporized, anything breathed in, anything goes in the bloodstream also is going to have adverse effects. And then you look at the risk-benefit trade-off. Okay, I no longer have the pain, but it's like the person that gets the radiation. The doctor says, okay, we got the cancer out with this surgery, but what we're going to do now, we're going to give you chemotherapy and radiation and make sure it doesn't come back, but won't this cause cancer at some point in the future? Well, maybe, maybe not. Well, what do you mean, maybe, maybe not? The science clearly shows all radiation is carcinogenic. Then I've just started a countdown. I just don't know when the date is that my cancer will reappear because of the treatment you're giving me. Isn't there another way I can prevent the cancer from coming back without it being harmful? The answer is yes, but that's not in this paradigm. That's a different belief system. And our official position is nothing works except what we're giving you. But isn't that true of all belief systems? Your God's the only God. If you're in the rapture movement, you're thinking you'll be saved, but everyone else won't be. You won't look at the contradictions. You won't look at the stupidity in your own argument because you've invested your self-esteem in it. And what we invest in, we rarely question. So I would say that if you looked at curcumin and also looked at green tea, polyphenols, cat's claw in large amounts, and cayenne, capsicum, you'll see that you can achieve even greater pain relief with no negative side effects. And I've had many people who are on medical marijuana who are not today, and their pain is substantially relieved, and their underlying conditions are improved. With medical marijuana, your condition never improves. You're just in an altered physiological state. The perception of the pain is diminished, but the actual underlying cause is the same. And let's go over and say hello to Dr. Martin Feldman. Hi, Marty.
I'm going to talk a little bit about allergy, especially seasonal allergy, which is upon us now. The seasons go from March, April, May, starts out trees, then grasses, grass pollen comes out, and later on ragweed comes out late in the summer. So we have these pollens pollinating. This has been a particularly bad year. And some of the symptoms that are out there are as follows. These are seasonal allergy symptoms: sneezing, watery and puffing eyes, itchy eyes, nose and throat, running a clogged nose, mouth breathing, dark circles under the eyes, wheezing and coughing. Got a lot of stuff that could be allergy symptoms. Testing, IgE RAST, IgE RAST, is expensive but very good for inhalants. That is for the pollens, for dust and cat and dog dander. But IgE RAST is not good for food, not at all good for food, but it's very good for inhalant allergy, just to know what you're reacting to. There are two websites I'd like you to know about. One is called www.pollen.com, whereby you can have a readout of the amount of pollen in the air in different places, in different parts of the year. It's an ongoing report. Also, www.webmd.com/allergies. Webmd.com/allergies. Some of the things to avoid the pollen would be minimizing early morning activity. If you wear contact lenses, take them out. Try not to rub your eyes or try not to touch your nose. You have problems with that. Try to keep the windows closed and use the air conditioning. In fact, even try to get a filtrette, F-I-L-T-R-E-T, filtrette sheet on the air conditioner as a filter beyond what filter might be in the air conditioner to begin with. Take off your shoes before you enter the house, which should be done all year round, but especially for allergy. And you might seriously consider getting a HEPA-level air purifier, certainly for the bedroom. It's not for the whole house. HEPA, HEPA level, is a quality level air purifier. Supplements that might help. Quercetin is a very good one, 750 milligrams a day to 1,000 for openers. Depends on how much allergy you have and the severity. You may even need more. Alisode, that's a homeopathic concept, and alisode has to be helped usually by a homeopathic expert, and that could be very, very effective for specific allergy zones. Stinging nettle herb can be very helpful. Bromelain, not with food, can be helpful. Vitamin C to bowel tolerance can be helpful. Fish oil can be helpful. Magnesium can be helpful, citrate especially. And I'll give you a few, if all else fails, I'll give you a few over-the-counter medications, which will be a last ditch. Zyrtec over-the-counter, 10 milligrams. Allegra over-the-counter, 180 milligrams. Claritin, 10 milligrams over-the-counter. Chlorotrimetan, 4 milligrams over-the-counter. And if the eyes are especially severe and bad, drop Sadidor, S-A-D-I-T-O-R, and Navcon, N-A-P-H-C-O-N, Navcon A, directly into the eye. So the point here is allergy can be very distressing, and the more we avoid the allergens and the more we fix the immunity reaction, the better our whole immune system will go over the long term.
Good information, Marty. Thank you very much. My guest, Dr. Martin Feldman, he's in New York at 212-744-4413. Now let's say hello to Michael Rupert, whose program here on the Progressive Radio Network starts in just a moment. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Gary. I can't get over the urge to want to sneeze ever since Marty was talking about allergies.
Yeah. What you got on tonight?
Just me again tonight. We've crossed another Rubicon this week in terms of the speed and severity of collapse, and it's taking a big emotional toll. And not only out there in the world among the people who see what's going on, but even in CollapseNet as well, because we process a lot of the bad information there. We're going to talk about that tonight, and a couple of really, really bad developments. And of course, I'm watching very closely the events at Fort Calhoun in Nebraska, and a couple other things that are out there. So we've got a lot to pay attention to tonight.
Look forward to it. Michael Rupert's show starting in just a moment. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening. Back. with Michael in a moment.